how did you get in the first place?
Well, that's a rather personal problem. I think, it's very hard to say, but I think it began with the 1948 War of Independence, when I had been involved in a lot of fighting against Arabs, and I came out with a bad conscience and a muddled mind, and I felt that by studying the Arabs, I'd get a better understanding of our situation and perhaps could do something to remedy it. And then I started studying Orientalistics, which means Middle Eastern history and economics and Arabic, and sociology, in the hope of gaining some better understanding. But soon enough I realized that while history and economics were all right, sociology wasn't of much use. So in midstream, I turned to anthropology for assistance. It came quite incidentally. Actually, it came like that. I planned to do field work with for my MA degree, which would combine my orientalistic interests with sociology. And I asked to go out and do field work. It was really funny the way I tried to fit the Bedouin into Passovian categories. It just didn't work. And when I came back from the field with a lot of field notes, I felt I had to write them down in some order, and I just couldn't do it. And that's when I became interested in anthropology, and especially in the work of Amos Peters.
And is that what brought you first to Britain, to seeking this kind of help?
Well, after a while, there was a long interval. You see, after I finished my MA, I was asked to become an assistant to the Prime Minister's advisor on Arab affairs. And I spent 5 years working in that office and finding out more about Arabs and about how Arabs are ruled and partly also discriminated against. And after 5 years of service, I got a prize. Permission to go to England and to study a year in England, and the British Council scholarship as well. And that's when I started in anthropology. I was actually only on leave from the Prime Minister's office, but that leave became very extended. It's now been on for the last 25 years, I think.
And this was in what year?
That was in 59.
And you came to Manchester?
Then I came to Manchester and I became converted to anthropology. It was such a radical conversion that you wouldn't believe I'm still the same person. And the conversion was done very unobtrusively. They didn't make me write papers, attend lectures, hardly anything. It was just in a series of conversations and analysis of books like E.P.'s Newer Study, reanalysis of the newer book and so on. And by the end of the year, I'd become a different person and perhaps an incipient anthropologist.
And did you then embark on a PhD program?
That was already part of a PhD program. And that, of course, led on to my field work with the Bedouin of the Negev. Now, I think there's an interesting connection between my earlier training in sociology and the way I treated the Bedouin. I was not a proper anthropologist. If I had been an anthropologist, I would have started off with segmentary political systems and ended up with the same system. I would have taken a very exclusive interest in father's brother's daughter's marriage and similar things. But being a sociologist, I was much more interested in external influences and how Bedouin fitted into wider society. I had to look at military government and how it affected the lives of Bedouin and so on. And one outcome was that I did a much more contextual study than a lot of people did at that time. And this again led on to my deeper interest in bureaucracy, power, government.
In this rather extended formative period in your training towards anthropology, whom you cite as the main people who influenced your thought and your scholarship?
Well, directly, I owe a lot to Emrys Peters. I think he's been the greatest influence on me. He's a marvelous teacher and also a friend. And I did work with Max Gluckman, and I worked also with Vic Turner, and I'm sure they influenced me in various ways that I can't even tell. But Emrys Peters has been most influential. And I think he's brought me to a point where he assured me of my own identity. I mean, not just continuing his work, but going off in another direction without feeling guilty about leaving him behind or anything of the kind.
And when you went back to Israel, was the new department in Tel Aviv already in motion?
No. We had to set it up.
In what year?
It was in 1964. As a matter of fact, that the year 1963, the year just preceding my going to Israel, was a very critical year. And I got two signs from God, that's what I call it, although being a disbeliever. First of all, I knew when I finished my PhD, I knew I'd never be able to get a post in Israel, because that was the situation. Eisenstadt ruled the roost, that nobody no anthropologist would be allowed in. And then one day I get a phone call from London, from somebody who was to set up a faculty of social science at Tel Aviv University, asking me, would you be willing to set up a sociology department in Tel Aviv? Secondly, and again, without any preparation, Lord Bernstein, who was the Mr. Sidney Bernstein, offered Manchester a research project in Israel. And a lot of money, so much money, in fact, that Max Gluckman got a bit frightened and was unwilling for a while to take it on himself.
You thought it was too big?
It was too big. And so I became involved in that research project, which has been one of the biggest projects in anthropology, I think.
Before you went to this, what was the second sign from God?
That was the second sign.
That was the second.
The Bernstein research scheme.
I see. Did this scheme really give sort of early Israeli social anthropology a whole sense of direction and a very unified sense of direction for all people involved, or was it sort of more pluralistic to start with?
Well, there had been anthropology earlier on. In fact, there had been several false starts in anthropology in Palestine and later in Israel. But that was the first time that anthropology became established as an academic discipline. And perhaps it's unfortunate, but it's a fact that the Manchester School became the exclusive representative of anthropology for a while in Israel. But later on that thing was corrected, because Haifa University took a different direction, and the same was true for Bar Ilan University and Beersheba University as well.
When you look around you at yourself and your colleagues in Israel today, what is anthropology up to? What do people work on in Israel now?
Well, I think Israeli anthropology has special characteristics. Firstly, it deals almost exclusively with Israeli society. And in this way, we have gone beyond some other countries where anthropology has been concerned with the exotic, with distant countries and esoteric matters, subjects. Secondly, We worked in a modern society. Even when I worked in the Bedouin society, I knew I was actually engaged in the research of a complex society, and I treated the Bedouin from the outset as a segment of a complex social system. And the fact that we knew from the outset that we were dealing with modern societies gave us some advantage over others, perhaps. Thirdly, because we worked in our own society, we became very deeply involved in what we were doing. So we never tried to establish distance between us and the people we worked on, and we got into very, very close relationships. And some of the ethnographies we produced are very intensive and very detailed and also committed. Another point one should add is perhaps that we also were concerned with the people we worked with. We weren't content with doing our ethnography, writing books and getting out. We stayed on in the society, and therefore early on they developed a trend which has even intensified over the years of studying social problems. Not necessarily problematic things, but things that were relevant to a society. And that's why some of us have been working in mental asylums, in prisons, in government offices, in factories, in old age homes, on violence and things like that.
Is that what brought you around in the last 4 or 5 years when you've been involved with advocacy on behalf of the Bedouins? Is it sort of the continuation of the same trend, you think?
Yes, it is probably a continuation of the trend, and it's also the payment of a debt.
Did you pay it? Did you pay it fully, do you feel?
No, of course not. You can never pay debts. And especially because I wasn't terribly successful. Or rather, I should say, we were successful up to a point, and then our project was more or less discontinued. So I can say that we helped 500 or 700 Bedouin families to get proper compensation and to resettle, and we established a new model for the treatment of the Bedouin by the government. And this model will certainly be applied to any Bedouin who are going to be resettled in the future. What I found really important, of course, was that this solution had been negotiated. A negotiated one was negotiated between the Bedouin and the government, and therefore it was acceptable to both sides. It was not the anthropologist being playing God, or the anthropologist representing government, or anything of the kind. Was the anthropologist acting as a mediator. So although the project will eventually be discontinued, it's going to stop in about 2 or 3 months, I hope that in future it'll be revived and that further Bedouin will enjoy it.
This is the project of?
Of the resettlement of the Bedouin in the Tel Malchata area.
I see.
Where an airport is now being established.
What are you currently working on?
Well, I'm now completing one book, a book on the Bedouin of Southern Sinai, which is mainly concerned with economics, a particular kind of economics that I found in Sinai. It distinguishes between one economy that maximizes profits or income, and another economy which maximizes security. And the Bedouin strike a moving balance between the two kinds of economies. Now, although this, I found this double kind of economy to be in Southern Sinai, I believe that in somewhere or other it applies to a lot of societies. It has just to be discovered. That's one thing I'm working on. Another project is a study in detail of the effects of a slum renewal scheme in Israel. You know, that is one of the major schemes. In fact, it's Mr. Begin, the Prime Minister's most ambitious scheme. And I think it's been not very successful. And I was commissioned to study the scheme and its effects. And what I'm in fact doing is a study of bureaucracy, because the scheme resulted in increased bureaucratic pressure on people, on weakening of local communities. So the interaction between government and local communities is really what we are concerned with. And part of the project is of course, a better knowledge of bureaucratic behavior.
Do you see this as a contribution to problems which are currently preoccupying a lot of anthropologists to do with applied anthropology?
It is not, sorry, it's not applied anthropology in the usual sense. It's theoretical anthropology, which eventually may be applied. I don't think much of going straight into applied anthropology, because that's a kind of shortcut. Not only a shortcut, it's a short-circuiting of anthropological reasoning. And therefore, we are carrying out a purely theoretical study. Once we understand the issues involved and the processes, then we can go a stage further and make recommendations. And not only make recommendations, but accompany them by political pressure. And that, to my mind, is an essential part of an anthropologist's work. So I feel that we have to remain theoretical anthropologists and advocates as well.
What is the future hold for Israeli anthropology? Where is the discipline going in Israel? We hear a lot talked about here in this ASA conference in 83 about the problem with university appointments and the need for more applied anthropology. For instance, one of the trends coming out here. Is it the same in Israel?
No, there is some difference. In fact, in Israel, we have gone through a short cycle. You know, at first, anthropology developed very rapidly. And once we established anthropology in Tel Aviv University, all the other universities followed suit. So now in all universities, there's a joint sociology-anthropology department. And people got posts, and there was research money, and there were a lot of students, and the result was that a lot of my colleagues became very smug and satisfied and went off in all directions. Some of them went into historical studies, historical reconstructions of North African societies, or some went into the analysis of games in 17th century Italy, or things like that. No longer things that were relevant for today, for the people living in Israel today. And the immediate result was the falling off of student numbers, and in fact even some jobs were lost. And now we're going through another phase. There's a kind of revival, which is partly due to the establishment of a research department in anthropology in the Desert Research Institute in Stavoker. And some of our colleagues have become aware of the dangers, and they're now moving into a new cycle. What I find fascinating is that all of Israeli anthropology at about the same time is moving into the new cycle, and some people are now moving onto new projects.
Thank you very much indeed, Emmanuel.
I'm too garrulous.
We are ending there. We're most grateful to you. Thank you very much.